The contents of the lab report are meant for educational purposes only. They're not meant to be misconstrued as medical diagnosis or treatment advice. Today on the lab report, is your microbiome getting you drunk?
It might be, and it's called auto-brewery syndrome.
Are the bugs getting you buzzed?
Wow.
What's your excuse, Patty?
I have none.
The world of medicine can be challenging. Clinicians and patients are always looking for more options, more effective treatments, and in the end, more answers. Functional and integrative medicine focuses on addressing root causes of disease. Here at Genova Diagnostics, we've watched this field evolve and grow for over 35 years. We've not only adapted, we've led. Join us as we talk about functional medicine, laboratory testing, and optimizing health. Welcome to the Lab Report.
How are we doing with the leprosy over there? I mean, your arm looks a little bit better. You've been suffering with some pestilence.
That's just what it's like living as Job. Hello!
Hi, Michael Chapman. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you, Patty
Devers? I'm crushing it. No, seriously.
Your skin is crushing it.
My skin is crushing it. Yours not so much. I'm really worried about you. Are you all right?
I think everyone in this whole building who's seen me at some point during the last 3 days is very worried about me.
What in the world?
I think I'm dying.
Is it chicken pox? What is it?
Hand, foot, and mouth, Patty.
Wow. You're a grown-up. How do you have hand, foot, and mouth?
Grown-ups get it.
Yikes. Well, if you're going to get something, if anyone's going to get that, it's going to be you.
If anyone's going to get anything, if there's anything to get.
You'll get it.
I will get it. Probably tomorrow.
Yes, you will. Well, I'm glad you made it for this podcast, Michael.
I'm glad I've made it to this podcast, too. We'll see about the next one.
Touch and go.
Yeah. So this is a podcast. It's called The Lab Report. It's brought to you by Genova Diagnostics. Thank you to Genova.
Thank you.
And it's where we talk about things like functional medicine, specialty lab testing, integrative therapeutics, and the like.
And if you're new to this show, welcome. If you're returning, thanks so much for all of your support. Maybe follow the show, rate, review, leave us some stars. We get so many great emails. If only we could translate those to, like, reviews. You know?
You guys, help us out, you know? Get us the reviews. They really do help spread the word. It's all about that SEO. It's all about getting that when people search for stuff, our faces are the first to pop up.
Yeah.
We should probably have our marketing team edit my face on that caricature and just add whatever scars are coming from this hand, foot, and freaking mouth disease. Anyway, so yes, give us some reviews. And if you have additional feedback, you can always send it to podcast@gdx.net. That's our email address.
And don't forget Genova Connect, which, you know, if you're a consumer out there interested in Genova's products, go to connect.gdx.net. There you can access products yourself, and we can connect you with a Genova client somewhere in your area to help guide your healthcare.
Awesome. And we'll save you some money
with
a promo code, and it is called Michael's Maladies 24.
No, it's not. Though it should be. That's not it.
The Lab Report 20, that's going to save you 20% off on anything you buy on Genova Connect. There you go. You're welcome.
You're welcome. But I think let's jump into what we're talking about today, because this is not well known, not well studied, apparently rare, though. I'm guessing underdiagnosed, if I were to bet.
Yeah.
Something called auto-brewery syndrome.
Yeah, it's super interesting. And man, what a huge impact that this can have on people's lives. It's pretty fascinating. Well, let me just start kind of high level and explain what the heck this thing is. So this is a condition that arises when people have a microbiome that is capable of taking carbohydrates and fermenting it into alcohol, right? So think about alcohol. Alcohol is made as a fermentation process, usually by yeast, if you think about something, you know, like beer or what have you, wine. So they're taking carbohydrates, these organisms, in the most circumstances, a yeast, and they have the capability to turn these sugars into alcohol. And that's what the fermentation is, and that's how we get alcohol. And in certain individuals, this is actually possible within their GI tract, within their microbiome.
Yeah, and in fact, so you'll have someone who has a really high blood alcohol level with not ever touching a drop of alcohol to drink. So you could see the implications of this legally, you know, morally within their families. No one's believing them. And all they're doing is eating carbohydrates, and they have a dysbiosis. So imagine what that might be like.
Yeah. No, it's just, it's fascinating. And it seems, here's one of the things about it that I think is most troublesome is how, what do you do with it, you know, at the end of the day? Because if your microbiome is able to produce any any carbohydrate or turn carbohydrate into alcohol, like we're talking about, mm-hmm. you can't have bread, you can't have
right.
fruits, you can't have these sort of things. So I don't know, let's get into a little bit more of the details so we know exactly how this arises, what changes in the microbiome, where you want to start.
Okay, so autobrewer syndrome is also known as gut fermentation syndrome. And we know mm-hmm. we talk about the microbiome all the time. We sure. all know about the gut microbiome and how the bacteria can be in and out of balance for various reasons. We all eat food, right? We all eat carbohydrates unless you're on keto.
I'm a breatharian.
I know. And so we all have these bacteria. We all eat carbohydrates. So why does it only happen to some people? And it's rare, though some people say remarkably underdiagnosed. And it's usually in people who have like a yeast overgrowth, specifically the yeast Saccharomyces cerevisiae, which mm-hmm. is also known as brewer's yeast.
Sure, right.
It's well known for its use as a probiotic. I mean, a lot of people take it, but yeah. it can also produce bread and alcoholic beverages in general when it's fermented. But it's been identified as one of the main causative agents for this condition, but there are other organisms that can do it besides yeast, and some are just bacteria like Klebsiella pneumonia.
What? Okay, that's fascinating. Yeah. Well, here's one thing, right? So you go to the store and you get a packet of yeast.
Yeah.
That's Saccharomyces cerevisiae.
Yeah.
Correct?
Correct.
Okay. And so should I be terrified of like using those little packets? Like how does it, if you can eat Saccharomyces cerevisiae and you put it in your food and it ferments and it makes bread and all that sort of stuff, we're consuming it all the time. Mm-hmm. Most of us, yeah. I would assume, encounter this all the time. Not to mention the fact that, like you said, people actually specifically take like tablespoons worth of brewer's yeast because it's also high in B vitamins, all these other things. So how is it that some people end up with autobrewery syndrome and other people would be my first question.
Well, I'll tell you that it can occur in healthy individuals, but there's also other multifactorial causes here, and it's usually found in people who have other comorbidities like diabetes or obesity-related diseases or Crohn's disease, problems with their small bowel or short bowel syndrome. So there are some other predisposing factors that happen, but it can in fact happen in really healthy individuals.
Hmm. Yeah, so one of the things, you know, that is kind of clear is we don't all have this. So there's some type of shift in a person's microbiome that leads them to have a higher concentration of these yeasts, predominantly yeast, mm-hmm. and predominantly Saccharomyces cerevisiae. And so like what are some of those conditions? And what we know is that it's quite likely that long-term antibiotic use also might expose somebody to a risk for developing this because like all things, when you take an antibiotic, it affects mm-hmm. your gut microbiome.
Uh-huh.
Frees up some real estate and sets up conditions to where things that normally don't have a high concentration might now have an opportunity to thrive.
Right.
And so that is one thing that has been observed. But not only that, one I think is fascinating is that gastric pH or just general pH of the GI tract is going to also have an impact on how well these yeasts survive, because yeasts in general are kind of acidophilic, meaning they like a more acidy type environment. And so if you have something that might be driving down your pH, making it more basic, that can contribute to it as well, right? So you're, just as a kind of refresh, your gastric secretions and you know your hydrochloric acid in your stomach not only helps to break down your food, but it also helps to sterilize your small intestine. And so if you have any sort of issues with hypochlorhydria, then that could also set you up. And indeed, a study did show that even something like antacids will affect the pH to the degree to make it which a more favorable environment for these yeast to grow.
Okay, hang on.
Yeah.
I'm going to think back to what you just explained. You initially said that these yeasts like Saccharomyces cerevisiae are acidophilic.
Mm-hmm.
So in my mind, that makes me think they like to grow in acid. Uh-huh. So how is like an antacid helping them to grow more? That doesn't make sense. That doesn't make sense.
Okay, so the optimal conditions for them to grow in, really, being acidophilic, is not a pH of 7, which is neutral.
Right.
But a pH of 4 to 6.
Oh, and so hydrochloric acid
is at a 2. Right.
Got
so
it.
If you are actually if you're doing something like antacids or proton pump inhibitors, to reduce the acidity of your gastric secretions mm-hmm. to the point to where now we're reaching, say, a 4 to 6 range, then you are setting up an optimal environment for these types of yeast.
Let me throw this out at you because it just occurred to me. We always talk about antacids or proton pump inhibitors, setting people up for SIBO, right? Because you're not a lot of bacteria live in your small intestine, and if there is no acid there to prevent them, they're going to move, they're going to thrive, because now it's like, hey, there's a party, we don't no longer have the acid. What if some of this autobrewery syndrome is really SIFO, small intestinal fungal overgrowth?
That's what
and
it
that
is.
Sounds like exactly what you just described.
Right.
So how many times are we thinking people have SIFO? I wonder how often they're doing blood alcohol levels on these people to see if, in fact, like, that's what I'm saying, it might be underdiagnosed in general.
For sure. And what they found in one study was that actually this was common, but not to the extent. Normally, people get diagnosed because there's some sort of legal issue that arises.
Yeah.
Where they have a blood alcohol content, or they're inebriated, like legitimately inebriated, and that's when they get diagnosed. But they found that there's definitely alcohol production to the point that's registering in your blood, but it just hadn't had any legal consequences yet. And listen to this list of all these organisms that can do it. We mentioned Saccharomyces, but Candida albicans, Candida glabrata, Intermedia, Candida krusei, Parapsilosis, Candida kefir? Is that one?
Yeah.
Okay. I hadn't heard that one.
Yeah.
Enterococcus, and you mentioned Klebsiella pneumonia. Like, there's so many. Most of those are yeast, and yeast are fungus, so SIFO.
But think about this. So you have someone with SIBO or SIFO, right? And if this is a chronic over time, they're building up a tolerance to this blood alcohol level, perhaps, and no one's checking it. Right?
Yeah.
Like, you're going to your functional medicine doctor because you think you have SIBO or SIFO.
Right.
And you're acting fine because you've had this, you're used to this blood alcohol level, so you've built up a tolerance. They're not just going to check your blood alcohol level. So I'm wondering how often patients with SIBO or SIFO should have their blood alcohol levels checked. That's fascinating, don't you think?
Yeah, I do think so. And there's also more, even long-term consequences, because as we mentioned before, this another risk factor is diabetes.
Wow.
And so if you combine diabetes and now something like a SIFO, where you're producing maybe subclinical alcohol content in your blood, you're exacerbating non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which is a little bit of a misnomer in this case, because it's non-alcoholic alcoholic fatty liver
disease. Wow, this is quite a conundrum. And then I think, okay, so if we know this is possible, we are all trying to diagnose SIBO and SIFO, none of us are ever checking a blood alcohol level. So the question then becomes, how do you diagnose autobrewery syndrome? Is it just in fact that checking like a SIBO breath test and doing a blood alcohol? Or is there some kind of challenge involved? How do you diagnose this thing?
Yeah, so as we mentioned before, a lot of times this is diagnosed because the patient themselves is coming in for assistance. You know, they recognize something is not right.
Sure.
They're experiencing the psychological ramifications of feeling intoxicated when they didn't have any alcohol, and they're like, this isn't good.
Right.
But aside from that, if you have somebody who maybe isn't experiencing that and they have GI symptomatology, and maybe they have risk factors also around a gastric surgery, or they've been on antacids, or all of these kinds of setups where you might have a clinical suspicion of autobrewery syndrome, or at least a SIBO or SIFO, then what you could do is you could start with something like a blood alcohol content, or you could, or a breathalyzer is one of the places that they start to just kind of check it. And then, you know, depending on the results there, a really solid confirmatory test is a carbohydrate challenge, which is where you give the patient 200 grams of glucose, and then you measure their blood alcohol content at various intervals up to 24 hours a day to see whether that glucose load resulted in their microbiome fermenting it into alcohol.
And I will say, the GIFX is also a great tool, right? Just to see how much fungal overgrowth.
Sure.
If any of these potential bacteria have grown out, these potential pathogens have grown out. And we also know that there are patterns that we see that are suspicious for SIBO on the GIFX.
So that's
a great place to start. The other good thing about that is that if you are suspicious of this and you'd get a GIFX and you do a breathalyzer or a blood alcohol content that's high, if some of these grow out, we are giving you sensitivities on ways to treat, which then brings me to this next question, Michael. Okay, someone comes in, we think they have SIFO, you do a blood alcohol level, it's high, you do the glucose challenge, that's also high, you have a GIFX, you have all this information. How do you treat these people? Like, what is the treatment here? And I would assume one of them would be to rebalance the microbiome, right? Like we say on the GIFX, you can treat some of these yeast with things like nystatin or some of the natural agents that we have. So I assume that's part of it.
Yeah, I think and I'm no expert on treating autoimmune syndrome, so I'm a little bit shooting from the hip here. But this is a circumstance where, you know, in all likelihood, and let's read down the rest of the article to make sure this is that what you do. But you don't want to be like playing around with like some like mild microbiome modulators here. Like you really want to weed and feed because you've got such a dysbiotic microbiome that you want to eradicate these yeasts because now they're doing potentially physiologic harm by creating alcohol and fermenting it in the system. So, you know, here's where I would probably be reaching for our antibiotics or at the very least very strong antimicrobials to remove that. And then, but that's never what the only thing we're doing, right? That's going after it, but it's not addressing how you got there. And so the next thing you want to do is correct the things that caused it to happen in the first place. And like we said before, if one of those things might be a hypochlorhydric environment, then I'm going to be working on making sure that the gastric secretions are adequate and that there's enough hydrochloric acid going into the small intestine to keep everything as sterile as it could be.
And then even long term, right, now you're going to be very focused on maintaining a balanced microbiome with whole foods, pre and probiotics, and then also working with a nutritionist because now you're going to be very weary of carbohydrates, sugars, corn syrups, fruit juices, things of that nature. So it's going to be like a multifactorial approach long term once you've had this. But then the other question is, who knows how long you've had it? Is there damage, to your point, is there liver or some other metabolic consequences that need to be addressed?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just so fascinating too, right? Because like if you're thinking, oh, wow, interesting, diabetes is a risk factor for this thing developing and what we might end up having to do in somebody just for the sake of adjusting their microbiome is put them on a low carbohydrate or even a ketogenic diet.
Sure.
But then you're also probably going to be having a positive impact on their diabetes as well. And so it's just one of those things where it's all connected, right? And and perhaps the issue around the connection between diabetes being a risk factor is just that, carbohydrates.
Right. So I think in my head, this what is always continually said about autoimmune syndrome, oh, it's so rare. It might just be that it's incredibly underdiagnosed and just something for us to always keep in the back of our minds because it's possible this is more common than we think.
Well, I would even invite the idea to not think about it as far as an on-off diagnosis.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Like this could be a spectrum of things to which any degree of, you know, yeast that's present or any high carbohydrate diet or any of these things, like, we could be producing alcohol at any point. We just have a sliding scale of how much is being produced. And we're only calling it autoimmune syndrome when it reaches a threshold that we notice, right? We can read it. It seems very abnormal on a breathalyzer or blood alcohol content. But if you've got yeast down there and you eat carbohydrates, you could be creating even like sub-measurable levels of alcohol, which, down, you know, in the grand scheme of things might not be a big deal. But it's like, don't think about it perhaps in the way of like, I have it or I don't have it. It's they're there. They have the capacity to do this at all times. And we want to make sure that we're, again, addressing the root causes. Travis is back from his sabbatical.
Nice.
How was Tibet, Travis? I like your new getup. Looking very wise.
Wow. Well, maybe Travis has become enlightened and maybe now he'll have something meaningful to share on this show. We could probably interview him regarding his enlightenment.
Nah. That's bad content. And also, Travis, no sand mandalas by the board, okay? It's really going to be a problem.
What time is it?
Oh, you know what time it is.
Question of the day. Wait, what time is it?
Oh, I think you know what time it is.
Question of the day.
All right, you want questions? I got some questions.
Sweet.
You want to hear a question of the day?
I do.
Well, it's really about, we're talking all about autoimmune syndrome and dysbiosis and perhaps fungal overgrowth and all this metabolic disarray.
Yes.
And we talked about how GI effects would be a great place to start because you'd see fungal overgrowths. You might see SIBO patterns, which are like high abundance or high products of protein breakdown of fecal fats or really high short chain fatty acids.
Or Saccharomyces cerevisiae showing up in the culture.
Correct. Or any one of these potential pathogens. Yeah. So that's pretty simple. But I'm going to flip the switch a little bit here, Michael. If You had the same scenario, someone with metabolic disarray, potential autoimmune syndrome, and or overgrowth. What would you see on things like a Nutrival or a Metabolomics?
Yeah. Okay, so a couple things. The first and easy place to start would be to look at the organic acid section, in particular, the dysbiosis section.
Sure.
Because if you're thinking that there's some type of overgrowth, what those markers are at the end of the day is they are fermentation products of bacteria, common ones, right? And so you eat things, bacteria ferment them. If they're doing so at a high level, then you might be suspicious to whether there's an overgrowth. And it could be bacterial, could be fungal. And we mentioned that both of these things could be contributing to alcohol production.
Right.
But one in particular is in the yeast dysbiosis section, and it's called D-arabinitol. Mm-hmm. This is more specific to Candida albicans. We think Candida albicans because that's what it's been studied around. But it's probably quite likely that if Candidas as a genus have the capacity for this enzyme to turn arabinose, a sugar, into arabinitol, a sugar alcohol, then it's probably that a lot of these Candidas have the capacity. And if you see a high level of that, man, that would be a good, interesting indicator as well. I'd be really curious to see whether there's any correlation in autoimmune syndrome patients with levels of D-arabinitol. So there's that part. Like I said, that's the easy part, looking for organic acids to in the dysbiosis section. But you also were talking about metabolic disturbances, and I think that we have a lot of internal data to suggest a certain kind of pattern.
For metabolic disarray.
And one of those areas is in the energy section for, again, the organic acids, where we're looking at beta-hydroxybutyric acid, which you might be familiar with if you've studied ketogenic diet and ketones. It is a ketone body. Mm-hmm. And so in the absence of a ketogenic diet, intentional ketosis, if you're making ketones, that's an indicator that you are no longer able to process carbohydrates in response to insulin like you should or used to. It's a predictor of worsening glycemic control and increasing metabolic dysfunction. So that's one place, but there's kind of like a, I call it like a sister biomarker, alpha hydroxybutyric acid. So you got beta and alpha, which has been correlated to worsening metabolic control, insulin resistance, diabetes as well, poor lifestyle factors. So those are kind of two big ones.
What about like the branched chain amino acid metabolites?
Yeah, so we've talked about this on previous episodes as well. We do know pretty extensively that in insulin resistance and diabetes, what you have is a higher circulating level of blood branched chain amino acids. You have branched chain amino acids floating around in your blood, and likely the logical reason for that is, again, you're not able to use glucose for energy as much, and because the muscle is also becoming more insulin resistant, it's increasingly using branched chain amino acids as fuel and as products for the citric acid cycle. And so it's releasing them into the system to be used that way. And so one of the ways that that happens is the branched chain amino acids get broken down by an enzyme called alpha keto branched chain dehydrogenase complex or something like that. Branched chain keto acid dehydrogenase, however you mix those words together.
Yeah.
And it actually does that heavy lifting, and we get these kind of breakdown products of the branched chain amino acids at higher levels. And we also see this sometimes in a ketogenic diet as well, because again, you're not using carbohydrates for fuel, so your body has to use fat and to a certain extent branched chain amino acids, which is why it's important to also make sure you're getting protein if you're doing ketosis. And we also can see a lot of times things like malic acid, lactic acid showing up in metabolic dysfunction, pyruvic acid.
Yep.
Those are common things to find as well.
Okay, so these are patterns that we see all the time in metabolic syndrome or any type of metabolic issue.
I'll give you one more. Just thought of it. So the oxalates, actually. Because we have high levels of oxalic acid being produced in diabetes and prediabetes. We have increased oxidative stress, which is driven oftentimes by insulin resistance. And both of those things contribute to high levels of oxalic acid production as well as the other oxalates. So I might be looking there as well as potential, you know, risk factors for development.
I was going to make the point. We see a lot of tests, thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of tests. We see all of these patterns. This is stuff we've already been looking at, patterns on the stool test, patterns on the Nutrival or Metabolomics. This is part of what we do all day. We're looking at metabolic dysfunction. The piece that we've never considered, however, is the alcohol piece of this in this autobrewery syndrome. So we're just putting it out there as a public service to put this on your radar that this exists. I'm not saying every SIFO patient has this. I'm just saying just putting it out there for public awareness.
Yeah, for sure. It's a good thing to be aware of, good thing to know about, and I expect we're going to be hearing more about it.
Yeah.
Next time on the Lab Report, we're going to talk all about biofeedback.
Oh, this is right up your alley, Michael. It's your favorite stuff.
I love talking biofeedback.
Let's do it.
Yeah. It's going to be coherent.
What?
You'll see.
Okay.
You've been listening to the Lab Report. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to our podcast, rate us, and leave us a review. To learn more about Genova Diagnostics, visit our website at gdx.net. There you'll find information on specific testing, educational resources, and how to connect with our show. Call us at 1-800-522-4762 or email us at podcast@gdx.net.
So you could see the implications of this legally, you know, morally within their families. No one's believing them. And sure, all they're doing is eating carbohydrates and they have a dysbiosis. So imagine what that's like.
Or if you're Patty, imagine how much money you could save. Ha ha ha.